And therefore, God's foreknowledge of an event does not necessitate his predestining of that event. That idea, by the way, Lewis borrows from Boethius and other ancient writers. Let me put it another way. My seeing of a present event does not determine that event. Why then should God's eternally present seeing of a future event, future to us, determine its outcome? When I see something in the present, I'm not changing it. Well, when God sees the future, he's seeing the future as if it were present. And so that doesn't necessarily change it either. Now, to come back to the great divorce, since God's knowledge is ever and always a present knowledge of our present choice, our freedom is not violated. Past and future do not exist in heaven. In the same way, the damned souls, the choices they make, are eternal ones that surpass and thus include the past. When they make their decision in that, in heaven, in the great divorce, they are making an eternal decision. In fact, it's a decision, Lewis says, that works backwards. So if one of those damned souls accepts the grace of Christ and the mercy of God, you know what? It will be as if he always lived in heaven, past, present, future. But if he rejects the offer, and actually most of the people in the Great Divorce do reject it, if he rejects it, it will be as if he had always lived in hell. And in fact, I've got to clarify something. I suggested that the bus goes from hell to heaven, but the bus does not actually land in heaven. Rather, it lands in a sort of plane that's right in front of heaven. And that plane for Lewis is a sort of valley of decision. It is a final representation in eternal time of the choices we make and remake while on the earth. But let us now turn our attention from heaven to hell. I'm sorry, from hell to heaven. I'm feeling dirty talking about all this hellish stuff. I want to move to heaven. I would like to move now from misery to joy, from darkness to light, from death to life. For C.S. Lewis, if hell is a closing up, a shrinking of the human potential, and rather the human personality and its God-given potential, then heaven is a blossoming, a consummation of our deepest desires. At the end of Screwtape Letters, Screwtape explains to his nephew Wormwood what happens when a human being ascends to heaven. And what he tells him is that when the blessed soul goes to heaven, he shreds off all of his, you know, sin and temptation like dirty clothing and just throws it on the ground. And to me and most people, that's beautiful. But to Screwtape, that is horrible. You know, he's disgusted by how easily the blessed soul just throws off all of that evil and heaviness. You see, heaven for Lewis, as it was for Dante, means final and absolute freedom. Not freedom to do whatever you want to do, because you often hurt yourself when you do that, but freedom to do what you ought to do. Freedom to grow into the person God created you to be. Now, yes, we must die to our old narcissistic, disobedient self, but only to be reborn into greater glory. Sort of like the seed has to die and be buried under the earth before it can blossom into a tree. Or as the Bible says, we must lose our lives in order to gain them. One of Lewis's favorite verses from the Bible. Yes, heaven is beyond selfhood, but heaven does not annihilate the self. It's trans-self rather than less than self. Lewis strongly rejected any notion of a one soul as a violation of our individual integrity. Many Americans, particularly those that read Ralph Waldo Emerson, believe in this concept, it's really an Eastern one, of the one soul, that when we die, we'll all become one group soul. Lewis absolutely rejected that. If there's one thing the Bible teaches, Lewis felt, it is the integrity of the individual person and personality. God will not violate that. We will remain ourselves, we will just become perfected. Because, as we saw earlier, God's final purpose is not, like Satan's, to efface our personality, but to fashion a redeemed humanity fit to be clothed in glorious resurrection bodies.